What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Grabs Podcast. If you're listening to this, you probably already know what we do here. But in case you stumbled in or this is the first time you're hearing, our goal here is simple. It's to highlight our wins and learn as much as we can from actual fireground rescues in the hopes of making us all a little smarter, more effective, and more efficient. Our guest today is firefighter paramedic Tanner Owens from the Des Moines Fire Department. And we're fortunate enough to hear his powerful story so that we can all learn from his experience. Thank you for coming on today, Tanner. We really appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thanks, Nick, for having me.
Tanner, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your journey, your experience, and your department?
Sure.
Or in your case, departments.
Yeah, for sure. I got involved in the fire service in 2015 after a couple of years with a career in industrial maintenance. I joined my local volunteer department in Nevada, Iowa in 2015. With zero experience. I went to my first training night and the chief cornered me and he said, "Are you sure you've never done this before?" And I said, "No, chief, this is as green as it gets." So he said, "I think there's something special here. I think this is something I can already tell that you should think about making a career out of." From that night forward, I took Fire 1 and Fire 2. I went through EMT class with Nevada Volunteer Fire Department. I moved out of Nevada after about 2 years with that department and joined another volunteer fire department about 15 miles away in Colo. While I was serving on Nevada and Colo, I started pursuing career fire departments. I had definitely figured out that this is something I wanted to do long term. But it back in that time, it was a dog eat dog world to get a job in full time firefighting. So it was definitely adventure. In 2018, I got my first full time opportunity with Newton Fire Department. Newton's about 30 miles east of Des Moines. And I had started and gone through paramedic school by this point. I was just finishing up some ride time with Newton when they hired me full time. I served from Newton October 2018 until December 2021. In November of 2021, after seven hiring processes, I got an offer from Des Moines Fire Department and started in January of 2022. I've been serving with Des Moines. I started in Station 9 after Recruit Academy. I served at Station 9 for roughly a year, and then I wrote a letter to go to Station 1. A little bit busier station. The hazmat team is at Station 1. I was already a hazmat technician, and I got along really well with the guys at Station 1. They're pretty aggressive crew and pretty aggressive firefighters, so I found my match there. In January, this month, we decided that hazmat was going to move from Station 1 to Station 5, so all of the hazmat members at Station 1 basically relocated to Station 5, and Station 5 is where I serve currently at Des Moines Fire Department. I've also worked part-time with Johnston Grimes Metropolitan Fire Department. I started there in April 2020. I served with Ty Wheeler, Joe Hoyam, Jason Kling. I've served with some of the other big names that have been on the show. They ended their part-time program in November of 22. So I stepped away from that department at that point. I also started with my local combination department here in Polk City. We have four full-timers. Three of them are full-time firefighters on a 24/48. And we have a full-time 40-hour chief. I work part-time and I work paid on call. I've worked through the ranks of firefighter, paramedic, lieutenant, and captain of training and EMS, which is the rank that I currently hold. I've been serving there since April of 2021. Other than that, I've been to a fire conference that was held by FD Tactics in Las Vegas in January of 2020, the Craft and Culture Conference, which Nick was at in April of 22. And then I've been down to Pensacola, Florida for County Fire Tactics Officer Development Program 2 years running now.
That's perfect, man. Shout out to Johnston Grimes and all the fellows down there. Thank you for everything you've done for the Grabs Podcast. It's much appreciated. Real quick question. Where'd you go to paramedic school? Did you go to DMAC?
I went to Mercy College of Health Sciences.
Okay.
So there's two paramedic programs in the metro. At that time, I was working full-time in industrial maintenance, so I had to take a night class, and DMAC did not host a night class. So I was working about 84 hours a week trying to start up a wind blade factory, and I was going to paramedic school at night.
Okay. Just curious. Long time ago, I got my EMT basic down in, I think DMAC, but I can't quite remember now, to be honest. It was a hops filled 4.5 years
okay.
in Ames, Iowa. All right.
Oh,
so
nice.
Let's circle and focus on Des Moines right now. What do you guys typically send to a structured fire in a single family dwelling?
Yeah, so first alarm for a single family dwelling is always 3 engines, 2 trucks, 2 medic squads, and 2 DCs or district chiefs.
Okay, how many people ride your engines and your trucks in Des Moines?
Generally speaking, 3 on the engine, 3 on the truck. That's what our staffing has allowed. It would be great to have 4 and 4, but for the time being, we're at 3 on the engine, 3 on the truck. 2 on medic squads, and obviously 1 in the DC car.
Okay, so we got 3 engines of 3, so we got 9 on engines. We got 2 trucks with 3 apiece, so 6 more, so that's 15. We got 4 people on the ambulances there, so we got 19 pairs of boots on the ground doing work, and then we got 2 chiefs there. You call them DCs, but I'm assuming they kind of operate like battalion chiefs in many departments. Is that a fair assumption that are kind of coordinating the whole fire ground?
Yep, that's correct.
Okay, perfect. Let's zoom in a little bit more. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what happened on December 12th of it, 22 or 23?
23. Yeah,
12/12/23. Why don't you paint a picture for us?
Sure. December 12th, 2023. It's about 10 o'clock at night. My crew late at night, we like to hang out in what we call the captain's office, but really it's our data entry office. It's where we write reports. It's kind of the hangout spot. So that's where we were at. We were just talking about going to bed, and 10:12 PM, the tones drop. You're always kind of curious if it's going to be a medical or a fire. But as soon as they said, engine, truck, DC, medic squad, we knew we were going on a fire. So my captain goes, all right, looks like we're going to fight some fire. We got out of the station very quickly. I was riding medic squad 1, and we were the first ones out of the station. Dispatch for single family residents. Caller states that him and his grandma are trapped in the second division of their house, and they can't get out. There's fire, heavy fire on the backside of the house and smoke upstairs. So medic squad 1, we get out of the station. We're getting updates. PD's arriving on scene reporting fire from the back of the house. They can see at least 1 victim. Engine 4 and medic 4, this is their first due territory. So engine 4 arrives on scene 3 minutes and 30 seconds after dispatch. And they initiate command by exception. Command by exception in Des Moines Fire Department means the first engine's going to have fire attack. Second engine's going to be a backup line. Third engine's going to be RIT. First truck is going to be search. Second truck is going to be ventilation, utilities, and scene lighting. First medic is usually going to assist with fire attack. Second medic is going to be accountability. First DC is going to have incident command, and second DC is going to have safety. Right away, they designate that medic squad 4, which would have been the first arriving medic squad, is actually going to start victim rescue. So engine 4 is making fire attack, medic 4 is initiating victim rescue when my rig, medic squad 1, pulls up. We position medic 1 so that we're in a good spot to do victim extrication and get the victims to the hospital. And then we immediately get out. We already have our turnouts on. We pack up and we start towards where Medic 4 is laddering the Bravo side second division bathroom window. As we're walking up, I'm already going on air. because I know that there's an opportunity for me to get up that ladder faster than Medic 4 can get on air and up the ladder because they're placing the ladder. So we walk up, Medic 4's got the ladder placed. I look up and I see a victim standing in the bathroom window. He's got heavy, angry, thick black smoke blowing out behind him. And he right away tries to go headfirst onto this ladder. I put my hand up. I told him to stop, that I would be up to help him. And I made my way up the ladder. When I got to the top, I told him that he was going to have to turn around and he was going to have to come out feet first. That's the only way it was going to work. He was fairly conscious at this point. Like Nick called it, we'll call it a little bit of smoke drunk. He had some drool coming out of his mouth. You could tell that he had inhaled some toxin. So there was definitely an opportunity to coach him through that. We wear MSAG1 packs, and we have ticks built into our pass devices. So I immediately turned on my tick because I knew this victim was going to have to re-enter the IDLH to get turned around. He got back inside the bathroom and started to turn around, and it dawned on me that he might not come out that window if he takes the wrong breath. So I'm watching him on the thermal. I cannot see him, but I can see that he's turning around. He's getting his legs up on the toilet and then up into this windowsill, which is a double hung window. Sash is still intact. He's a pretty big kid. He's 17, but looks like a football player. So it's a tight fit. I'm able to coach him out of the window and get him on the ladder. And then from there, put my arms between his armpits and really coach him on getting down this ladder rung by rung, making sure he's not missing any rungs or stepping off the side of the ladder. At the same time this is happening, Truck One has been designated to search, and unbeknownst to us, basically because we were mostly paying attention to the scenario that we had in front of us, Truck One had entered the house and initiated a search on the second division. The 17-year-old male, the grandson, had also told me that his grandma was still in there and she was in a bedroom. So we knew there was another victim up there. Truck One knew there was likely another victim up there. Got down to the bottom of the ladder. My partner from Medic One was waiting there. He took the grandson and took him to the medic squad to start checking him out. Medic Four was standing at the bottom of the ladder. They were on air, ready to go, so they made their way up the ladder. They were going to do a window-based search, not knowing that Truck One was already upstairs also doing a search. I followed Medic Four up to the windowsill, and I watched them from my thermal as they exited the bathroom and started their window-based search of the second division. Not 30 seconds into that evolution, I turned my head to the side, and I could see that my partner and several other firefighters had moved the cot to the alpha side of the house and loaded up a second victim, and they were headed back to the medic squad with a second victim. I let our Medic Four know that the second victim had been removed. The atmosphere was safe at this point. The fire was out. There was still some smoke upstairs, but they were safe to be upstairs. There was other companies operating inside the house at this point, and I went down the ladder. I met with my partner at Medic One. We got both victims loaded up in the ambulance. We did some pretty basic care. We are an advanced level service, but we did some pretty basic care because we were only a minute and a half to 2 minutes from the hospital, and we knew what both victims needed was immediate attention that we couldn't give in the back of the ambulance. I got in the driver's seat and we drove to the hospital. When we left the fire scene, both victims were conscious. But the grandmother, the one that had been pulled out by Truck One, was sort of in and out of consciousness, but able to follow some commands. We got to Mercy Hospital in downtown Des Moines in about, like I said, a minute and a half, 2 minutes. And they had already called a trauma alert and they were waiting for us. So we took the grandmother into Trauma Bay 1. We sat the grandson on a chair outside Trauma Bay 1. He was absolutely only concerned about his grandmother at this point. So we got him a glass of water. He said he would be okay. And there was a nurse coming over to check him out and get him a room. In Trauma Bay 1, the trauma team was waiting at the Des Moines hospitals. They call 30 seconds of silence, which means the whole room is quiet so we can give report. We gave our report. We said this victim's been in a house fire. She was drug out down the stairs from an upstairs bedroom. She's definitely got soot in her mouth. She's had some smoke inhalation, but she's been able to follow commands and she's been relatively stable so far. After we gave report, we were cleared by the hospital. Medic Squad 1, along with two extra members from other companies, headed back to the fire ground. Companies were still doing overhaul and checking for fire extension on the Charlie Delta side of the house. So we were able to pack back up and assist with overhaul and extension for roughly another 45 minutes to an hour. Medic 1 transported at 22:27 or 10:27 p.m., which is 15 minutes after dispatch and 10 minutes after we arrived on the fire ground. So very quickly got the victims out of the house and transported to the hospital. To our knowledge, both victims are fine. We did get follow-up on the grandmother that she was possibly going to get flown to our local burn center. Obviously, her age was not helping her case, but she was stable enough that they were going to take care of her burns at another hospital via helicopter transport. So, yeah, good outcome from both victims.
Perfect. If you don't mind me asking, how old was Grandma, if you do know?
Grandma, I believe, was 87.
Okay. And then you said when you went back, you were looking for extension on the Charlie Delta side. Can you tell us kind of where that fire originated and kind of where the main body of fire was at when Engine 4 arrived on scene?
Yeah, so Engine 4's arrival report. Engine 4's arrived on scene. We've got a two-story single-family residence. We've got heavy fire blowing from the Charlie side. We've got heavy smoke coming from a Bravo side second division window and the front door. So pretty well involved on the Charlie side. It ended up starting in the back porch on the Charlie side and extending into the kitchen. And when Engine 1 did the backup line through the front door, they said that fire was blowing pretty heavy into the living room of the first division in this house. This house did have hoarder conditions, so we had a lot of fuel load that was developing a lot of that heavy, angry black smoke in the second division.
Okay, and it sounds like, based on smoke conditions, that the bathroom door that the 17-year-old was in was open. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So that door was open. And what then, about where was the grandma at, and was she behind a closed door, or was that an open door as well?
Yeah, so the grandma initially, what the grandson had told us was he was in what he described as the back left bedroom, which would have been the Bravo Charlie corner. She had relocated herself to the Alpha Bravo corner bedroom, and she had sort of bunkered herself in behind some totes and some clothes, but she was also behind an open door. So there was definitely flow paths in the house. The windows in the bedrooms had been like covered up with styrofoam insulation board and I'll call it saran wrap for lack of better terms, but basically they have drafty windows, so board up the windows and cover them with saran wrap in the wintertime. So doing a VEIS on those bedrooms may have presented its own problems, but we were able to find her via primary search anyway. So
okay. You said that the gentleman was pretty big. So in my head, I picture a big corn-fed Iowa boy trying to get out a small bathroom window. Was that window relatively small in the bathroom? What did that window look like?
Yeah, I would say like a typical double-hung bathroom window. I'd estimate maybe 18 inches wide and, you know, maybe 36 inches tall, but sash still intact. So we're dealing with almost an 18 by 18 square hole to get this fairly big dude out of.
Okay. And you mentioned maybe he was a little bit smoke drunk. Was it difficult to assist him down to ground level on that ladder?
Yeah, Nick, yeah, I would say in the perfect scenario, when we train on the fire ground, we're always training with people that have been down ladders before. We're training in perfect conditions where there's no real fire, or maybe we're doing a live fire training scenario. But for the most part, everybody on the fire ground knows what's going on. When you take that to the streets and you're in an IDLH with active fire and a real emergency, the best comparison that I have is like trying to teach an alien how to create a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, in that you have to go through it step by step, because that it's not going to make sense to that victim that's never been down a ladder before. So coaching him from not diving down the ladder head first to turning around in the bathroom and being able to get his legs up on the windowsill and pushing himself out with me assisting him, and then even climbing down the ladder was rung by rung with me coaching his legs and me making sure that he's not falling off the side of the ladder. And I weigh about 200 pounds, give or take, in pretty good shape. He was probably in the 225 to 250 range. So you've got 500 pounds on this 24-foot extension ladder. It's bouncing up and down a little bit, and we've still got heavy smoke blowing out the window. It was definitely a chance for me to see that not every ladder victim rescue is going to look like what we do on the training ground.
That was a really good description. I like that analogy that you used, teaching an alien how to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Like, some of the stuff that we take for granted now becomes infinitely harder because these people have never done it before. Maybe they're smoke drunk, they're confused, their lizard brain's taking over. So really good kind of description of what you had to do right there. You had mentioned that there were reports of victims before you guys actually got to the scene. What, if anything, within your organization might change when you hear reports of victims trapped versus either reports of everybody out or just no reports at all? Does anything change explicitly within your department, and then maybe even implicitly within certain crews?
Yeah, for sure. So I would say that within the department, we've got a pretty good culture of life safety, incident stabilization, property conservation, you know, the order of operations. But when you hear victim and you're not even out the door of the station yet, you're already getting into that mindset of search tactics, you know, maybe vent enter search tactics, window-based search. Your head's not immediately going to fire attack because you may be very well doing search and victim rescue before fire attack's initiated. So when you hear that there's definitely going to be victims, you're already in the train of thought of victim rescue and search, and the wheels are already spinning. I would say that within the department, we train on search quite a bit. I would say it's a pretty squared away department. There's definitely more aggressive crews. And I would say that as the department has changed from sort of an older department into a younger generation of firefighters, that there's been more interest in attending outside trainings, being more into the job. I would say we have a lot more students of the craft that have realized that you can make this a lifelong journey of being a student of the craft versus, you know, we learned everything we needed in Recruit Academy. Now we just have to maintain. There's a lot more of, hey, I can keep going to school and learning more and advancing my knowledge and being a better resource for the residents of the city of Des Moines than there used to be. So we're kind of in a shift. And our culture is getting much stronger as the years go by and more recruits come on.
Beautiful answer. You also mentioned something in your description of this scene. I think you called it command by exception, where you talked about that kind of clarifies what every responding unit's task is going to be. What is the, is there like a juxtaposition, or is there an opposite of that? Let's say he didn't call command by exception. What would that be? Is that just where that first arriving officer then delegates and and distributes tasks to incoming units, or is that spelled out as well?
It can kind of vary. There's a couple other modes that are spelled out in our accountability and response SOGs. One is obviously investigation mode. So if we show up and nothing's showing, we can go into investigation mode. That means all other units responding are going to stage until we decide what's going on. Okay. We could have a fixed command, meaning that the first arriving officer is going to set up a command post. This would be like a larger, more serious incident. We could have mobile command, which means the first arriving officer is initiating incident command, but he's going to be on the move. If otherwise not delegated, then we go into command by exception, which is basically a pre-filled what everybody's going to do when you arrive on scene.
Okay, so just by not saying anything, that's kind of the default mode. Is that correct?
That's correct, especially okay. With active fire showing.
Okay. What's one lesson that you've learned from this fire that you'd like to pass on to our listeners?
Yeah, I would say don't get complacent. You know, even when you think that you've got all this training and you've been to all these conferences and you think you're ready for whatever is going to get thrown at you, just because you've done it on a training ground doesn't mean it's going to look exactly like that when you get on a real scene. I would say be a student of the craft, keep trying to learn more, being an ambassador for younger people on the department, and continuing to grow will take you a long ways. And I would say that what I do a lot of the time is I play out scenarios in my head. I watch some videos online of other fire departments rolling up on fires and just, you know, what would I do here? Or what would this look like within my department? So that when the event does come up, we're more ready for it.
Well said, man. As we kind of land this plane, is there anything else that you want to highlight or emphasize or anything else you want to talk about before we kind of land this plane?
I would say anytime we're getting called to an event that is a possible structure fire or even a private alarm, because more often than not, we can have private alarms that turn into an event. Expect the fire, expect the victims, expect that you're going to be doing work, whether that's fire attack or search. And really, at the end of the day, remember that we're doing it all for them. It's all about the people of the cities that we're serving. So they're our number one priority, and it will always be worth the risk.
That was beautiful, Tanner. I just want to say thank you so much for sharing your experience with us. We really appreciate your time and your authenticity. For everyone listening, if you or anyone else you know makes a grab, please go to firefighterrescuesurvey.com and fill out a quick survey so we can all get smarter, better, and faster. And if you make a grab and you want to share your experience with our listeners, please reach out to either Grant Schwalbe, Justin McWilliams, or myself, Nick Ladine, and we'll try to record an episode. Lastly, thank you to everyone listening to this. Take care, everybody. Going, going.